Hello and welcome to The Unsafe Space, a weekly podcast with myself, Sarah Ryan, who used to be a Fianna Fáil councillor, and my worst half.
Keith Redmond, former Fine Gael councillor.
It's a weekly podcast where we rant and rave and argue with each other and agree with each other about all of the issues that we like to think, or it has been confirmed to us that a lot of people in Ireland think, talk about, say in private, but don't want to say out loud.
That's it, exactly. You know the way you go to a dinner party and people say, I know you're not allowed to say this anymore, but, and then everybody I agree with that as well. Yeah.
It's the new, I'm not being racist, but
exactly.
you actually are completely being racist. I know you're not allowed to say this, but, and then they say what they really think. This week, we're going to touch on a very sensitive subject.
Gender dysphoria, transsexual transitioning, I suppose, is the whole umbrella. What we'll talk about.
So the reason why this kicked off is because, in continuation of my pledge in the last podcast to start just being more honest, I was somewhere last week and I was talking to somebody, we have two sons, one is 3 last Saturday and one is 9 months old, both boys. I was sitting at an event and I was chatting to this woman who had 3 boys and we were kind of chatting, laughing, and I was saying, I would love another baby. What's having 3 boys like? Because obviously it's a good chance I'll have another boy. And she was kind of saying, and this person not involved in the conversation interjected and said, I don't think you should be assuming the gender of your children. I think that you may already have a daughter if that's what you're talking about. And I'm sorry, but like, I just think that's nonsense. I think it's nonsense. Like, a 9 month old, I have 2 male children, one is 3, one is 9 months old. Like, could they possibly have issues with their gender in the future? Maybe, but right now they're male and that's the end of it as far as I'm concerned. And I think that there is a hysterical contagion effect happening with this issue. I think that people are so obsessed with their own agenda that they seem to be completely ignoring the collateral damage that exists in some children who are unnecessarily being encouraged to transition when they're going through a perfectly normal stage of childhood. And I have 2 sons, as far as I'm concerned, for now. They're male, and I don't think we should even be considering whether, like, the gender of a 9 month old. Gender is a scientific issue, as far as I'm concerned. They're male, and that's it.
Yeah, now, on the other side of that, you will have people who say to you that gender is a social construct. Sex is what you're talking about. Sex is the biological sex, is the anatomy you were given at birth. But gender is how you feel about your sex.
Well, fine, but then let me be clear. We can have a debate about whether or not gender is a social construct.
Mm.
But gender sex is not a social construct in children. Children,
yeah.
A 9 month old is male or female. As far, like, there's no question about that yet. Later,
well,
when they're old enough to make adult decisions, then we can talk about that.
Well,
but a 9 month old is a male or a female.
Well, it's
like,
funny you
say
that. I think obviously the 9 month old isn't even aware they're born, right?
Yeah, he's a little very cute little slug.
But the 3 year old, you know, I would have thought, like you do, that like at 3 years of age, they're not going to be aware of gender to the point where it would cause them any kind of level of anxiety. But there is a place in the UK called the Tavistock and Portman NHS Trust, which is the specialist centre for dealing with gender dysphoria in children. And they have set up drug regimens and environmental regimens to begin the transitioning process for 3 and 4 year olds. Now,
but can we just
that's the bit where I get a bit.
Can somebody just write this down, whoever's listening? Mark my word. Like, that is, I find that offensive.
And
it takes a lot to offend me. And I think being offended is nonsense. But I think that is absolute, like, science experiments on children that nobody knows the long-term effect of. And mark my words, anybody listening, write it down. 20 years from now, there'll be three people sitting on the stage on The Late Late Show as part of a redress scheme where the state is being forced to pay them money because they were inappropriately allowed to change their gender when they were children. We have a law in this country. You're not allowed to have sex until you're 17 because you're not considered old enough to make decisions like that about your body. So why would you be allowed to change your sex if you're not allowed to have sex?
I just can't understand how a 3 or a 4 year old would be considered a reliable enough person to, that a doctor would sit down and say, yeah, you were hand a bad deal there at birth 3 years ago, and you're actually just given the wrong gender. We're sorry about that, and we'll sort that out for you. In fairness, five of the staff in the Tavistock and Portman NHS Trust resigned because they weren't comfortable with this regimen for 3 and 4 year olds.
Because nobody is able to confidently say what the long term effect of this is because it's new.
Well, nobody. Well, see, nobody.
These are guinea pigs.
Well, I mean, I think you had a story before about you personally knew somebody who.
I know somebody. As a child. Somebody very close to me who went through a stage from probably a little bit older than 3, but like maybe 5, where she was like, "I'm a boy. I want to be a boy." Wore a baseball cap with her hair, wasn't allowed by her mother to cut her hair, but like wore a baseball bat, wore boy clothes, and
Wanted
to be called Matthew, and like was a full on like whatever. And only I think by luck of her birth, the time she was born, it was completely ignored, and she grew out of it. And there's absolutely no question now that any of that. It was a phase of childhood, as I understand it, not uncommon.
Now,
so how does somebody know the difference before anybody starts piling on? I'm talking about a 4-year-old. How does anybody know for sure enough to make dramatic medical decisions about that will affect somebody's entire life, that a 4-year-old is a reliable source to make? They aren't. And this is wrong.
Well, this
is wrong.
This Tavistock and Portman Trust, they've seen over the last 10 years a 3,000% increase in demand for their services generally, and a 5,000% increase in demand amongst girls attending who want to be boys. Now, that level of demand is not a natural, organic number. I mean, something sociologically has to be happening behind that number. That's not biology, that's sociology. And there has to be something happening that's driving that level of demand. And I think really, if you look at it, it wouldn't be an enormous leap to suggest that we're seeing an awful lot more of this in the media. You had the Jenner, Bruce Jenner becoming Caitlyn Jenner. And then you've had a talk and conversations about transsexuality across all platforms, social media platforms, and it's become the kind of the buzzword. And I think it was really intriguing that there was a 3,000% increase in general, but a 5,000% increase amongst girls. And it is known that their teenage girls in particular are very prone to this kind of collective kind of like a collegiality. They will see an issue arise and they will feel an affinity toward it.
They're anxious because you boys are so mean to
us. And they do suffer from anxiety more than boys. They do. I think it's quite interesting that there are a lot of studies coming out now. Of course, they have to be, unfortunately, after so many years, people suffer the consequences of these actions, and then the studies start coming out. But there's a study by a guy called Maybody, and it discusses what are called the comorbidities, psychiatric comorbidities of patients with gender dysphoria. So in general, what that means is the people who identify as gender dysphoric, they also have recognized and diagnosed other psychiatric conditions associated that may or may not be associated with it. So 33% of them have been shown to be depressive, 20% have a specific phobia disorders, and 15% have what we call adjustment disorders, just the inability to adjust in society.
To be fair, those could be as a result of
It's chicken and egg. Are they a result of it or not?
I mean, if you've grown up your entire life feeling like you're completely at odds with the body you're born up in, of course you're going to be depressed.
Yeah, no, this is the point. You see, I don't think we've teased this out as a society. We certainly haven't teased this out as a medical community. Dr. Michael Biggs is a professor of sociology in Oxford. He said you simply cannot know the long-term effects of this mass experimentation that, for example, Tavistock and Portman are engaged in, but other centres around the world are as well. You simply can't know the long-term effects on individuals, number one, but also on the wider society in general. I mean, you see those increases in demands at such a high level. What was happening to those people before they turned up at Tavistock and Portman Hospital? What happened to those 5,000%? What were they doing before that? I mean, I think you really have to, as a physician, you've got to have pause for thought and say, what am I seeing here? Am I seeing a genuine medical issue, or am I seeing some degree of of a sociological issue. I mean,
and also,
is this a cluster?
And also, you know? It's really, really bad news for people who are transgender.
Yeah, because genuinely. Because, yeah, absolutely.
Because if there's a contagion effect or whatever, it will undermine the cause, make, you know, it harder to be taken seriously, make, you know, 17 and 18 year olds in the future who are going in and speaking to a doctor about care find it harder to get it if this continues.
Because people will start to disbelieve them. Because, I mean, I do believe that this is a genuine issue. I mean, this is, you have to be, obviously, I have to be very sensitive here. I mean, I know people who are transsexual and I have absolute respect and sympathy and empathy with them for the journey that they have to go through. And it's, as you say, I think that this kind of artificial bubble that's surrounding it is undermining their individual kind of their individual journey, because it makes it harder for them to be taken seriously, makes it harder for them to be taken seriously in the medical community and society in general. If so much of this can be discounted, we're seeing now, for obviously as the numbers increase, we're seeing what's being called kind of regret, gender regret. Transsexual regret. So in 2015 in the United States, the Gender Equality Network produced a study that showed 11% of those who'd gone through gender reassignment surgery now regretted it and wanted to go back to their original sex. So, I mean, come on, folks, there's something going wrong if you're medically diagnosing something and getting it wrong one out of every nine times. So that was the study in 2015. That was before the major explosion in demand. We can only assume that that number is going to go up with demand as well. So, you know, we do have something to talk about, and it's one of the topics that we always talk about. It's like the topic you're not allowed to talk about. Nobody's allowed to talk about these things. Nobody's allowed to say that that transsexual regret exists. It's considered transphobic to even say that it exists, but it does exist. It's scientifically shown it exists. We know it's happening. There was a new advocacy group been set up in the UK called Detransition Advocacy Network. And it was set up by a guy called Charlie Evans, who was born a woman and became a man and experienced regret himself. And he has been contacted since he set up the advocacy group by 300 people who've been through transition surgery and now regret it. So, like, you know, we have to talk about this, even if it's awkward, even if people get offended. We have to start talking about this, especially if they're involving kids.
To your basic libertarian thinking, like, adults should be allowed to do whatever they want, and as long
do
as
they're not
harming
yourself,
anybody else
or
whatever. It's, you know, not to be too won't somebody think of the children thing, but it's the children part of it that I have a real issue with. We can't experiment. Like, there will be a generation of children who are messed up because of this, thousands of them going in for these different things. Just let kids be kids. They go through weird phases, like, they, you know, all the spectrum of it. But a three-year-old, like, our three-year-old this week was telling people that he was a dentist.
He also thinks he's Buzz Lightyear half the day.
So I just cannot comprehend how he would be asked to make any decision. He can't even decide what he wants for his lunch. So this, you know, feeding children a concept and then, you know, affirming to them that their latest thing, I just think it's an absolute recipe for disaster. And these problems are only going to increase. And it's a symptom of, we've developed a society now where nobody wants to have the hard conversations. Nobody wants to ask the questions. Nobody wants to put their head above the parapet and say, well, what about this and what about this? And has anybody thought about that? Because the mob will just come for them or whatever. We're not saying that transgenderism doesn't exist. It does. But what I have a real issue with is people, you know, making decisions about the entire rest of the life of a three-year-old based on something that may be a contagion. Maybe he heard from somebody, or a child like the person I know going through a perfectly natural phase and they'll grow out of it.
Yeah. I mean, when you go through puberty and teenage years are such emotional years. I mean, I remember, like, your emotions are a roller coaster. You're all over the place, and some days you're, you know, almost depressed at the thoughts of something small like going into school. And the next, you know, you have anxiety about the group of friends you're with, and you want to fit in, and, like, it's such an enormous time of upheaval. And to, you know, for teenagers to be making these decisions is bad enough, but for children to be making these decisions is just, I think, folks, it's really, really just asking for trouble. I mean, it really is asking for trouble. But you're right. Can you imagine being a politician in Ireland now and calling a press conference saying you want to discuss a concern you have that we're entering into a phase of history now that we're going to regret and we need to talk about, you know, transgender regret, that would be eaten alive. I mean, I half expect us to be eaten alive even for discussing it now. And I would like to think we're discussing it in a relatively sensitive way. So it's, but it's something I think that unfortunately we're going to have problems with. And we need to be talking about this, folks. We need to be talking about it.
But how do you do that in a way that's sensitive to people, you know, and people's decisions, but also creates a healthy amount of skepticism about this kind of thing in young children?
Mm. Well, I think you go back to the individual. And as you say, I mean, I'm a big advocate for the individual. And if an individual adult wants to make these decisions, then that's something that the medical community obviously assesses to make sure that it's a genuine diagnosed issue, and it's not a psychiatric issue in another way. It's not an anxiety disorder. It's not depression. It's not a personality problem. I mean, it is a proper gender dysphoria. And if they diagnose that in an adult, and then they bring them along, and a lot of people who suffer gender dysphoria, they don't necessarily go through with anything. They don't necessarily do hormone replacement therapy. They don't do the surgery. They can live halfway. They can live, you know, they can just dress a certain way, be seen by the world a certain way, and that's enough for them. Other people feel the need to do the hormone replacement. Other people feel the need for the surgery. So it is a spectrum anyway. Yeah. But I think you can be sensitive and kind to individuals undergoing this life challenge without completely abandoning all rational kind of analysis of a wider contagion, a wider movement, which is seen in the numbers. Like 3,000 to 5,000% increase in demand for something has to make you sit down and ask the question, why? You know, and is it just because it's now acceptable? Okay, fine. But a 3,000 to 5,000% increase that all of these people were all suffering in silence and now they've all come forward, I really, really don't think so. And the numbers now about transgender regret are showing that there is a sizable proportion of people whose dysphoria, whose unhappiness, whose anxiety and depression is not being treated by undergoing the transgender process.
And that's a terrible disservice.
Yeah, it is.
Because what that says is that they failed to get the proper medical treatment.
They were misdiagnosed.
They were misdiagnosed. And now they've had a treatment or a surgery or whatever it may be that has dramatically, you know, scarred them for forever. Mm. And they still feel terrible. So that's not, you know, something that you would ever want for people. But the problem is that because we live in a society where nobody's allowed to question this, it looks set to continue until people start, you know, pushing back. And we're only seeing more, like, kind of, you know, more push in education towards, like, you know, the new education program towards talking to kids about more and more and more of this stuff. Like, I don't understand why that needs to be on the agenda. I don't understand why you can't just let kids, you know, I never got any.
Yeah, this is going to be spoken about in all schools in Ireland now as part of the new sex education thing, that transgenderism exists and you could possibly be in the wrong body. And so I think if you're going into a primary school and you're giving that talk to primary school
I think when
students,
you're going into primary school, you should go into primary schools and talk about Paw Patrol.
Yeah, I think if you're in a primary school and you're being taught that you potentially are in the wrong body, children are so suggestible. I really do think that all you're doing there is stoking up potential problems. In teenage years, yes, obviously, you want to discuss these things, you want to talk about their bodies, their changing bodies, all that stuff, absolutely. But primary school children do not need this conversation. And, you know,
to talk about topics that, as you just pointed out, the numbers show, we don't even understand ourselves yet.
And adults
we
find don't hard understand, to talk about.
We can't talk about it. We don't understand it. We don't know what's happening. It's all new. Why would we be telling kids that?
Yeah, no, I definitely don't think I'll be letting my kids in primary school, you know, hear about all this kind of stuff. I mean, this is something we can discuss in the family if need be, if something like that arose. But at the same time, it is more likely going to happen in puberty and teenage years with that change that occurs. And that's the time to talk about it.
But our kids are also going to have friends who have parents who are same-sex relationships and all those different things anyway, and it'll just
they'll
be normal if you don't start coming in and making it a big thing.
Like, yeah, yeah.
They'll just see the world and it'll be, you know, they'll learn, and if we teach them respect and compassion for everybody at home, that will hopefully, most of the time, everybody makes mistakes, but most of the time, be reflected in the way they treat all people. I don't need a stranger to come in and tell my kids about relationships and this, that and the other. Thanks.
Well, especially if the narrative is going to be along the lines of the what is politically correct at the moment, which, as I said, I really think we're going to turn around and regret in 10 or 15 years time and say, this was a mistake. We should not have been talking about this in this way, or we should not have been pushing this in this way, or we certainly should not be funding, you know, transgender treatment for 3 and 4 year olds in hospitals. I mean, this is, you know, we've gone too far, folks. We've gone just too far. And, you know, the emperor's not wearing any clothes. And this time somebody stood up and said, the emperor's not wearing any clothes. So I think that pretty much covers it, actually. Yeah, I mean, I think we've hit all our topics. So this was a bit of a shorter podcast this week, but we just thought, you know, having seen those news stories that came out this week, that we really wanted to talk about this, you know, because it's not something that's spoken about a lot, and people obviously understand to be very, you know, wary about speaking about it, and it has to be done in kind of a delicate way. I hope we hit the right balance. But I think it's a conversation that hopefully we'll start that needs to happen. And if you agree with it, if you disagree with it, You can catch us on Twitter, hashtag unsafe space. Do let us know what you think. And if you have any other topics that you'd like us to discuss, you can contact Sarah or I on Twitter and let us know. Okay, so this has been the Unsafe Space. That was episode 8. And we'll see you again.